Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Hull Seahawks Behind the Curtain. And we've got another fantastic episode lined up for you this week. And once again, we are doing a deep dive into the volunteers that make the Hull Seahawks what it is. And this week, we're going truly behind the curtain. We're going down to the locker room and we're talking with Tommy Evans, who's the equipment manager of the Hull Seahawks. How are you, Tommy? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Absolute pleasure to have you here on the show. You know, everyone will see you, you know, darting around the arena, you know, particularly, you know, just before, you know, in between periods, getting down, you know, for all the warm-ups, getting the equipment down there. But, you know, this is just a great chance to let a lot of the fans know that exactly all that goes into what is such an important role for the club. But first of all, we'll just start off on a personal note, and we ask pretty much every guest we have on the show here, on Behind the Curtain, how you got into hockey, you know, in terms of, you know, as a fan of the sport and, you know, yourself playing the sport when you were younger as well. How did it all come about?
So I was about 10, maybe 9 or 10, and a friend of mine got some roller skates. I quite liked the idea of getting some boots, so I got some boots along with him, potted about the street, car parks, whatnot. And then at the time I was playing rugby for West Hull. And yeah, I was all right with rugby, and I broke my collarbone when I was just going into secondary school. It took me a while to get back into it. And after I got back playing, the team weren't the same. So I started looking elsewhere, and then obviously I was skating a lot. And my uncle at the time was working at British Aerospace. And he said, I can get some tickets for the ice hockey if you want to go. So I thought, we'll go down. It was the Kingston Hawks, obviously. They were sponsored by British Aerospace. So that was my first taste of hockey. And then from there, just started going skating ice arena, doing the Sunday morning sessions and training with teams and that. And then I was in and out, really, probably up until 13, and then I thought, I'll give it a good crack. And by that time, it was a bit late, so started with the juniors and played there. I didn't really get on with, because I was late into the sport, I didn't really gel with the dressing room. Everybody was real close-knit. So I'd do the camps, I'd do the training. And then I think I was 13, 14, I started training with the Cobras. Trained with them for a couple of years. Always had one foot in the junior system and one foot out. And then started coaching with Jonker on a Sunday morning. Started doing the summer schools with him. Did 3 or 4 years of summer schools coaching the under 10s, 12s and 14s. And then life sort of like went in a separate direction to where I was going. And quit and just walked away from the sport and left it at that.
And of course, you know, as always happens, you know, sometimes life takes you a different direction. But 2019, just ahead of COVID, you sort of found ice hockey again. And you sort of never looked back once again.
Yeah, so there was an advert on Facebook and it said, this team's recruiting new players. Entry level, like players, beginners team. So I thought, I'll get my kit out of the loft and go see if I can still skate. I rocked up, got my kit, and then the bug bit. So literally watching Kingston Hawks and Old Thunder, probably the first year of Stingrays I watched fully the season as well. So I was a fan of all them. And then I went back and it was the Pirates. And what the setups, the Kingston Hawks folding into the Thunder folding into the Stingrays, was quite hard days. But when I went back to the Pirates and I saw the place was absolutely rocking, I thought, do you know, it's like an happy ending. It was an happy ending for me, and how far it had come, and it was really, really good to see. So, yeah, and then COVID it, and it all went downhill from there.
Yeah, yeah, of course, with the Pirates, obviously, a lot of people had some fantastic times. It sort of did sort of re-energise hockey, I think, you know, for some people in a way. Of course, you know, through the Stingrays and sort of through the Pirates days, you know, the crowds were sort of, you know, pretty stable in holding. You know, the fans are absolutely loving the hockey. And then, as you say, COVID hit, you know, the world's a different place and we get, you know, rising from the ashes almost, you know, the whole Seahawks, you know, a little bit like a phoenix.
Yeah.
And of course, adverts going out all the time. You know, the Seahawks needed people to help out, needed volunteers. And, you know, the role of the equipment manager was one of those that was available. Yeah. How did it all come about in terms of sort of starting up and applying for the role, you know, finding out you got the role and then sort of taking it from there, knowing that, you know, within a few months you were going to be, you know, down there on the bench, equipment manager for a national division side?
So I kept seeing, well, being knowing a lot of people in hockey, you keep hearing the rumours, this, that and the other. There's a team coming back. Obviously watched the Jets for that season where there was no national team. And then, yeah, the news broke. And I thought, oh, yeah, it'd be good to have a team back in all where it should belong. And then I kept seeing all the apply for the jobs coming up. But the equipment manager kept coming up. And I thought, shall I? Do I want to go on an adventure? Do I not? And then it kept coming up and it got later on in the summer and later on again and then it popped up and then do I think there was one it said if you want to meet Matty, go down this Thursday. And I knew a couple of lads that were training on a Thursday night with them anyway. So I messaged the page, didn't get a reply, and then I emailed Ian. I said, oh look, I can't make it this Thursday coming. And I see Matty the week after, and he was like, yeah, he can. But if I'm honest, there's someone else lined up and he's set on with him. So I was like, oh, fair does. I'll see what happens. And then the following Thursday come, and I managed to have a sit down with Matty and have a chat. And after the end of the chat, he was just like, you've really like thrown a bit of a spanner in the works here from like what he had in his plans and his mind. Direction that he was going. There's a few days, I think it was probably the following week, he rang and said, yeah, you know, if you want it, job's yours, we'll give it a go, like. And then yeah, season later, here I am.
No, it's been, you know, a fantastic first season. I've, you know, from just getting to know you around the ring, seeing how busy you are, you know, behind that curtain, it's fantastic to see. We'll come on to a little bit more of that in just a moment, but sort of sticking with the personal side of things, obviously it's not just yourself who got involved with the Seahawks. It's a bit of a family affair.
A massive family affair. My two boys play in the juniors, Alex and Archie. Alex is in the under-18s. I think it's his last season in the under-18s. And then Archie's under-14s this season. So, yeah, we're there Monday and Wednesday anyway. The missus, Nikki, she does social media for the Sharks, and I think this season she's doing well. Last season she was helping out with the mascots, and I think this time she's on the bench for the mascots, which is a pretty big deal for me, really. The more important what people realise, the mascots. And then my mum and sister, my mum's the goal judge, and my sister, she was in the penalty box, and they both went round giving the selling the tickets for the stick. So yeah, the full family's there on a Sunday night, really, just about, apart from the dog. So yeah, that's it.
Who knows if Sammy wants a friend? Let's bring a four-legged friend down. but let's talk a little bit about the role then, because obviously the title's equipment manager, and it's not just sticks and skates, is it? There's a hell of a lot that goes on, you know, with yourself, you know, and between the players and the coaches in that dressing room to make sure that they're equipped, not just for a Saturday and a Sunday night, you know, for the long nights of training as well. It's a pretty full-on role.
Oh, it's massive. So basically, my week, throughout the season, my week probably starts on a Thursday night. I get into ice arena at 7 o'clock. Matt will follow me after. Boys will come in after that, do what they do, go upstairs, have a chat about the weekend, whatever, get on the ice. And Thursday is a really horrible day for us because we're on at last session on a Thursday. Some of the lads have to travel from Goole or, you know, wherever the Sheffield maybe. And it's Thursday is quite an hard night to do. But then Friday we have the tea time session, and after the tea time session, Matt, I'm setting up for the weekend. Things are getting packed. The lads will come to me, and some might want the skates doing, some might not. Check the sticks, whatever they need for the weekend. Because if you're on a long trip, you know, and you don't get it right on the Friday night, you've got maybe 2 hours, 3 hours in the morning, you know, to get stuff like on the coach, packed on the coach, make sure everything's ticked off and gone. And then let's say we're going to Milton Keynes, we'll travel down, set off midday, get there. And normally on a Saturday, they're quite early face off, so we can get in, set up in Milton Keynes. So let's say we're going to Milton Keynes, we have two dressing rooms, so we'll have one for the players, maybe the goalie goes in the other one. We'll have the two tables set up. Massages will be going out, make sure everybody's in good spirits, and then obviously the game will go ahead, pack up, we'll get on the coach, and then we might get in maybe two in the morning. Let's on average probably about two in the morning. And what we can't do, what other teams can, is because it's a council rink, we can't get into the rink. So everything has to be packed up, ready for the next morning. And then lads will get off. I'll come in Sunday morning, probably 7. Get everything out. Things need to be dry then. Like the kit needs to be dry. Some of the lads like the kit bone dry. So they need to be hung out, dried. And I'm probably done for, I'd say, probably 11. Like everything in its place, gloves drying. I'll go through all the skates for the night. If it's been a easy-ish weekend, I might have a half an hour to watch maybe my lad play or whoever's playing on the Sunday, and then players start rocking up at 2:30, and then it's do it all again. So the players come, get the massage beds out, make sure everything's right. If any damage on the skates from the previous night, some of the benches that we go to, they'll have concrete on, like the away benches will just have like mats. So you step in between a mat, your blade's done in. So make sure all them are done, make sure all the gloves are dry. Lads start arriving, and then it's prep for the game night. That's it. Prep for the game night. Get everything on the bench ready. Get the pucks out. Make sure we've got more pucks than the away team. You know, and just that's it. It's Sunday night's the home game. That's probably my favourite part of the weekend.
No, that's the thing, isn't it? Is of course you got to try and get the job on the Saturday night. You need the 2 points, but yeah. That's what you really look forward to, isn't it? A Sunday night game late on Hull, the Hull Ice Arena, absolutely rocking.
Yeah,
because it's not just the players; it just, you know, everyone involved with the club. You can feel the energy when the place is busy.
Yeah, so the public session busy, but we can't really do much really because the public's got to be out. So we can't draw the curtain, the place in hours yet. But once it starts kicking out, the curtain gets drawn, the lads come in, you know, play a bit of football, relax a little bit, and then they'll go, have the team chat, and that's when it changes from a bit of a relaxation to, right, it's game time now. So things change room changes, you know, and just try and stay out of the change room, let the lads do what they need to do. And if I'm needed, they'll come, you know, just give us a shout, or if any issues arise, because so many different issues pop up over a weekend. It's unbelievable, really.
And sort of in terms of the role, how would you say you took to it? Was it quite a steep learning curve, or was it in terms of gelling with the team as well, was it a pretty quick one? Straight, as I say, you took the role pretty late, you know, pretty close to the season as well, didn't you?
Oh, so when I arrived for my first full night to meet the team, we had nothing to cut sticks. I had to bring my saw from a workshop. I remember like things just turning up, like all the jerseys turning up, and we didn't even have coat hangers. you know, to put them, put anything on, never mind like a rack to hang anything up. So it was literally thrown in the deep end, and this is what we've got to work with now. We didn't have a stick bag to go on the coach, so all the sticks had to be taped up. Just, I know it sounds real petty, but it's the small little things now.
Makes your job and it makes everything so much easier, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I knew like a couple of people from the previous Pirates and watched them play. But the team, yeah, I took to it pretty well. Obviously, having an hockey background really helped. So I pack, like if I was packing the bags, I'd pack all the bags the same. Like that's no issue, but it's probably the volume of stuff that like is pretty breathtaking. Like you can, if I go to play a game, I'd pack my bag an hour before and I'd just breeze like through it, just steady away. But when you're getting picked up at 11 and a lot of the boys help out, they come and pack their own bags, but you've just got to make sure everything's packed. So you've got to go around the room, make sure everything's right. Because you are, if you haven't packed a skate for, let's say, or something's wrong and you're in Bristol, you're done. Like that's it, you're done. So everything's gotta be done, dusted and ticked off the checklist really and ready to go. Both nice really.
No, it sounds like obviously a lot of fun, but a lot of pressure as well. That's the thing, isn't it? In terms of the equipment, I believe I've seen another one of these sort of late developments, which was the phenomenal glove drying rack that I believe was.
Yeah.
Was that the DIY of Lee Pollitt's father, Steve?
It was Steve who come up with it. I think he made one for Blackburn Hawks. Again, when I turned up, we had nothing. I had to bring like a heat gun. I found some hair dryers from the Pirates, I think there was from the Pirates. And so I knocked a few pipes up just to get some of the lads' gloves dryers up until we sorted out a glove dryer. And then, yeah, Steve come up with that. And it's a good little bit of kit. Like it really, really helps out. Really helps out.
No, for people who sort of have never seen it, it's a lot of plastic pipe work and some big dryers, and it just blows hot air into the gloves, doesn't it? It's a sort of
that's it.
It sounds so simple, but
oh yeah, I mean when you go to some of the away teams, even when they're at home, they still just have PVC pipes. So this has all got a timer, 15, half an hour, 1 hour and 2 hour timer. So it's pretty good really, because you can just put some stuff on. We've been out on a Saturday night, get back in the morning. If some lads like their elbow pads done, some lads like the skates done. So you can put each one on for an hour and try and manage everybody so everybody gets what they want done. Like I do everybody's gloves to bone dry. But other people like a bit more equipment dry. So a couple of people like their elbows burn dry, so they get chucked on and put a towel over it. An hour later, yeah, you're good to go. Really, good to go.
No, love a bit of ingenuity like that. In terms of sort of everything you have to pack, everything you've got to get ready. Do these double headers ever make it more difficult? I've seen that. I've got one on top of my head. We do Swindon. And then Slough, I believe, in around February time. Does that ever make things even doubly difficult for you?
Not really, because the only thing we did do different is we took the skate grinder just in case there was any problems on the Saturday night. But normally, with everybody having backup steels, you know, we didn't take the grinder to away games last season. The steels got done on a Friday, Thursday or Friday night. Some people like to skate on them. And then they're good for the weekend. Other people like them fresh for the game. So now it's probably mainly packing for yourself. But there was the kit to get the kit dry was an issue. We had to hire out a meeting room last season when we did we did Basingstoke, then Romford, and we was in a nice hotel and they had like a press. Like conference room, they are all the lads come in about 10 o'clock, hung the kit out, and I went in the next morning And I was like, we're going to get charged for this thing.
I would not have wanted a meeting.
Absolutely. The heating was on full and there was 20 kit bags all in this meeting room. And I just walked in like 8 o'clock on the Sunday morning. I thought, no chance. No chance we're going to get billed for this. So I hope no one had a meeting that day.
Honestly, I can't think of anything worse. Having walked past that dressing room after a game. No, it shocked me that, I'm not going to lie. It's thrown me a little bit. In terms of sort of, you've mentioned, of course, things like the steals and how players like things doing differently. But I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, people who are involved with hockey will know all about it. But, you know, for some of the fans who come just as a fan of hockey and have maybe never been involved behind the scenes, never had a family member or a friend play the sport, they might not know sort of how technical a lot of these things are. You know, things like, you know, the angle of the grind, things like stick flexes and, you know, all these sort of things that you've got to know about and manage to make sure that every player's got everything just how they like it.
Yeah, so the steals, everybody has their own set of steals. And everybody likes their own ground. It varies from player to player. Some people like a deep ground, so they've got a lot of grip in the corners on the edges. And some people like a shallow ground, and they're a bit faster and straight line. It's everybody's flat out throughout the season. Everybody stays throughout the season. But last season we went to Leeds. I think it was Leeds. It was towards the end of the season. And everybody on a 5/8 ground after the first period was complaining at me, even our chaplain the day before. And it turned out they'd defrosted the ice the day before, done some work on the pad and turned it back on, and it went up to temperature. So it was a soft pad. And everybody who was on a shallow ground was struggling on their edges. So you pick up like real, you like going to Basingstoke, for example, that's well, we won't this season, but a lot of people didn't like the ground. Maybe wanted to drop down a ground when they were there because softer ice and harder ice and stuff like that affects everything. So, yeah, this season, I know if I'm going to Leeds, the backup steals for the people on the 5/8 might have a lower ground. So they've got a bit more grip instead of losing their edges. But yeah, it's little bits like that that you pick up that don't really matter to anybody else, and no one else really knows about it. But you, it matters to you, because if five lads are on 5/8 and they're all picking up issues, you know there's something else at play. But and it ultimately all comes down to you anyway. So it makes no odds to them. It's me who has to sort it out. So yeah, got one in the neck for that game.
And something we were chatting about just before we actually started recording this is a lot of people might have seen the viral video as well of, I believe it is Toronto, it's certainly an NHL equipment manager who is going around and tapping the top of the stick of whoever is carrying the puck at the time. And it's just, of course, we mentioned it's a little bit more difficult for you because you're on the gate as well, but it's, you know, if a player is skating over to you, you know, broken a stick or lost a stick and you've got to get it to them within a couple of seconds, I'd be all over the place. I'd be fumbling through them, knocking them all onto the ground. Obviously, as you mentioned, it didn't take you very long, you know, very quickly. You're able to just, you know roughly where everything is from your setup anyway, but just be able to know exactly whose stick it is, you know, one look and it's gone and it's away. I just can't imagine sort of how difficult it would be, if I'm being honest, because, say, we all know that, you know, there's so much, you know, to the sticks, you know, length, flex, you know, different way the P players tape them up. But when you've got to do it in 2 seconds, a stick looks like a stick.
Yeah. So there's a few different player sticks that stand out. But basically, when I'm setting the bench up, if it's an away game, I'll have the sticks with me. A lot of other teams and a lot of other rinks have two doors. So I try and have the sticks on my side. So if I'm doing one door, backup will be doing the other door, the other side. So it'll have to be forwards or D-men coming off. But I'll have the sticks with me. But I put them in numerical order because I know everybody's number. I deal with the numbers. Like helmets have the numbers on. Skates have the numbers on. Sticks, I'll write the numbers on the tape. So everything's in numerical order. It's, sometimes if they get mixed up, it really throws me out. If someone like takes a stick to the dressing room and it comes back and I didn't realize and it's in the wrong place, that'll throw me out for a couple of seconds. But everybody's stick goes in numerical order. People like Nath, he has a massive, massive tape job. So his looks like cotton wool buds. Like that's how his stick is. He has a must go through a roll of tape just to tape his shaft up. It's that big. So that sticks out, and other people stick out as well. Like Towns, he has tape under the tape. So all that, when you're looking for it, just sticks out a little bit more. And then people like Deck Barmer, he has custom stick. So he's a bright silver, his stick out. Obviously, Spec stick was massive, tall, purple.
I was just about to get onto that because maybe making the first appearance on the podcast, my partner's actually just walking down the stairs with it now. I say this is giant. Those watching on YouTube will be able to see a bit of this, but it is nearly 6 foot long. You can see on there, I believe it is numbered somewhere with the spec.
Could be 71. On the tier. Oh, no, he has his name on. Yeah. Sorry. He has his name on the shaft because it's a custom stick. Yeah.
If I can maybe rotate that so people can see on the YouTube, but we have there's a Svec 71 there, but that's ridiculous. That is nearly 6 foot tall. No wonder he's got the slap shot from hell.
Yeah, we struggle to put them in the back. We have to wedge them in. So that's all. But yeah, so it is. Most of them are easy to find, especially when they're in numerical order. And you just know, like if 16 coming up, 21, 22, you know, 56, whatever, 91. It's all.
If you already remembered some of the new guys' numbers, or is that going to be a September job?
No, that'll be September when they start arriving and we put the stickers on the sticks. So I write them on. Yeah, there's only a few different ones, so it shouldn't take so long to pick them up. And yeah, it is pretty easy once you get the sticks in the order you want, you know, and you're not searching for them, you know where they're going to be. So yeah.
No, I say that's the one part of the job where I'd instantly think but I'd lose it. The system would be thrown out the window or more or so over the bench for myself. But a few little fun ones. I say we talked a little bit about you know, some of the players like things done differently, you know, and maybe also just backstage, you know, well, not backstage, behind the curtain. Let's say we'll use our tagline, shall we? Who are the easiest and the worst players to sort of to deal with back there? Who's a little bit more demanding than others, shall we say?
Brutes. He shouldn't be, but he is. He likes odd things done, and he'll come to me and he'll just be like, can you just do this for me for that? Can we do this? And I've already done it normally, but can we just dry this? Or if you've got any, whatever he needs, it's sorry. But everybody's pretty, to be fair, they're all pretty straightforward. Yeah, there isn't really anybody who's massively demanding. Goalies, they always get priority with the helmets on the dryer between periods, especially Jordy. He'll always have his helmet on. That's just locks. That's just, it's a starting goalie, so he'll get that.
I can confirm for those at home that Jordy's he gets a bit sweaty when he's on the ice. I was lucky enough to get to win one of his Christmas jerseys last year, and yeah, as you mentioned, the smell in that conference room, it was probably reminding me of what I smelled when I got that Jordy shirt.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, no one's really picky with anything that they need specially doing. But I just like Jordy, I'll just put bang his helmet on the dryer in between periods and make sure he's ready to go and stuff like that. But there's no one really overly picky at the moment anyway. So that might change.
We'll wait for the new recruits to arrive. We'll maybe ask this one again in 3 months' time. In terms of actually being on the bench, of course, you've been involved with hockey, for long periods of your life, you know. of playing, you know, as a fan, and you know, now sort of, you know, volunteering with the Seahawks. In terms of being down there on the bench, sort of in and amongst it in the game situations, is it sort of how you imagined it would be at sort of the higher level of ice hockey? Sort of what's it like down there? You know, from when we're on the commentary gantry, myself and Martin, we can just about hear what goes on down there. But, you know, what the fans might not be able to obviously get that, because obviously, particularly in Hull anyway, both F and E blocks are so far away from the benches, yeah, aren't they? It's quite far away. What sort of things, of course, we know the players are talking the game, but what's it actually like being down on the bench and in amongst it?
It can be hostile. It can be hostile. Especially last season, a lot of games probably didn't go our way. Probably, as it's been spoken a thousand times, running out of steam on a Sunday night was quite a reoccurring issue and frustration setting. And you just got to... It was all took out on the bench. You know, whatever said on the bench, you've got to stay on the bench. And if someone said to you, like in frustration, you've just got to be able to let it go. You know, sometimes being on the bench, it's really hard. And I'll give you an example. When things went south against Bristol, Towns was coming off for a change, and Jimmy was in my ear to my left, and he was saying, "Right, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go." I opened the door for him to get Jimmy on quick and Towns off, and the puck come to Towns, and then he turned around to pass the puck away, and there must have been 2 or 3 second gap, and the kid come in and hit Towns, but he hit Towns into the open door, and that's when Jimmy saw red. And I went home that night,
yeah,
and I thought that was my fault, because it was quite a serious, well, it turned into a bit of a serious, you know, 13 match ban and whatnot. But you've just got to crack on. Like, what happens on the bench, it's got to stay in this group of people that are on the bench. Like, there's loads of things said between people, and sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative, depends which way the game's going. But you've just got to be able to let it go, and then the next week you start again. But yeah, running the bench, I don't say I really run the bench, but watching the game, I don't watch what you'll watch. So if you're watching someone going down into the...
You're looking for the next change behind.
I'm watching the D's coming in for the change, and vice versa. So if we're back checking, the forwards might be coming in for a change and stuff. So I rarely get to see goals or anything like that. I'm always watching the opposite. Where the puck is, I'm looking somewhere else, unless it's like a penalty kill or a power play or whatever.
Yeah,
then
and you camped I'll out get in to the watch. Zone.
Yeah, yeah. I can get to watch the game then.
But no, it's pretty difficult. I'll say that when we're up on the gantry for the commentaries, obviously we've got, between myself and Martin, you know, we've got two sets of eyes up there, and it's constantly, you know, if one of you's calling the play, we're sort of trying to scan for that thing as well, looking for who the next line's coming on. You know, if the puck's being dumped in, we're looking, you know, someone's going to call the play behind the net, someone's going to call the line change, and it's you've got to sort of constantly be on the ball with absolutely everything, you know, for yourself in terms of managing, you know, what's going on, making sure that, you know, those doors are open and ready, the change is smooth. And then, you know, in a similar way for ourselves, making sure the listeners at home and sort of and the people viewing the stream know exactly what's going on the ice, because if we weren't looking at the line changes, but I think it'd be absolutely pandemonium at times, not knowing who's out there, you know, in terms of, you know, the play on the ice. But last one was, while we're talking about sort of interesting stories on the bench, any other funny, what was it, PG tales, anything else worth a little mention? I'm sure, obviously, you're probably, of the people, you know, working for the Seahawks, you know, the people who are so closely involved, you know, we've had Matt and Callum on the show already, and, you know, I put yourself in that group as well, of people who just spend so much time in and around this team that, you know, you are part of the team, you know, the team couldn't do what they do without you, so... anything that you can share with the group that the players might not?
Well, not really. Not anything that the players might not. There's some funny tales, funny things. At the beginning of the season, we went to pick Nath up, And I think it was going to Telford. It was the bus driver kept starting this bus up, and he just wasn't having none of it. Wasn't having none of it. His alarms going off and everything. And we was outside a petrol station where we picked Nath up, and he's like, "Oh, something's wrong with the engine." Anyway, we went round the back, and like all these hoses had blown off. So I was like, "Hey, gives you toolkit." So I was like, took the radiator hose off and trimmed all this radiator hose down, and then got it going and got the bus going, and we managed to get to Telford. But yeah, that was a strange one, getting the bus going, and then I can't remember where I was going. The second story, I've got a palate, I've got front teeth from I can't tell that story, that's not PG, but yeah, my front teeth are a palate. We went to WH Smith, and I was sat on the bus, and I bit this baguette, and my teeth just snapped in half. So for 2 hours on the bus, I didn't speak to anybody. I didn't speak to nobody. I didn't let anybody know. And then I think we got about 2 minutes away from the arena where we was playing. I said to Matty, "Oh, I've got no front teeth. I've bit this baguette and snapped them." And anyway, he was like, "You're joking." I'm like, "I'm not." And then before the game, just before the game, before everybody was going out, Tom's like, "Come in here, Tom." And he was like, "What's up?" And I was like, "No teeth," and the full room just like,
Bonkers.
"Hey, you got no teeth." It just erupted. But yeah, so there's been some weird stories. But yeah, there's probably the two easiest PG ones I can remember, really.
No, and it's those sort of things, you know, that those little laughs, you know, behind the locker room there, you know, that we absolutely love sharing here. You know, I'm sure there's gonna be people stopping you in the rink now to say, "I heard that
Oh
story
yes,
on."
yeah, about my teeth and that. Yeah, it's a reoccurring thing. Everybody likes that story. Crops up every now and then.
But we'll talk Seahawks in general now, of course, you know, not just as somebody who volunteers, you know, but you got to see as a fan as well. What are your hopes for the season going forward? Because, you know, we've mentioned a 1,001 times, difficult year last year. This off season, you know, we probably couldn't have asked for, you know, many things to go better,
No.
really. You know, the recruitment's been fantastic. The events put on already have been brilliant. You know, with the fan club, you know, with the quiz night, and we've had the shirt launch, family fun day. You know, the title sponsorship from Reckitt's is, you know, absolutely huge for this club. Everything is pointing to a much, much better season.
Yeah, well, with Reckitt's, that's been ongoing like for a few months now. So I've been aware of that a few months. I'm just glad to see it done, signed and over the line. Just because I think it's massive. It's massive for the club to have someone that size on the jersey. Do you know, there's been plenty of companies and businesses that have helped various teams out through the years, but you know, probably. When you're looking back and you're thinking about businesses, a couple stick out in my mind when it was Stingrays and Funder, but like British Aerospace was probably the next biggest along that line. So to have someone that size, probably maybe bigger, is it's really good, really. It's amazing for the club, and let's hope it sticks out for a couple of seasons. But I've been with the boys all summer, been on the ice with the boys, and the changing room is just a different changing room. It's hard to describe. If you walked into a changing room, you'd think it's a good changing room. But like last season, we had a really good changing room. Everybody got on, and I think it's been spoke about. If we didn't have a good changing room, it could have got like really gone south really quick, but you know it didn't. And then a couple of the lads come back, Bonner come back, Bobby come back. There's like I don't know. It's not an atmosphere. It's just a feeling that they've been there. They've all been there together, and they've done it together, so they know what's what. Honestly, it's a real strange kind of feeling in the dressing room. It's not like they're relaxed, but it's like they
Well,
know what they're capable of. Yeah,
they're
not
confident.
yeah, they know what each other's capable of, and it's like it's just changed. Like everybody grafted last year, worked hard, and done more than what they asked for. But this year, it just seems a bit like it's just strange. It's like in a good place, but it's just strange. It's like we've been there, done that. We know what the new lads can do, and like if the imports come, they're the cherries on the top. You know, no one knows what they're like until they get here. But if they perform like what we can see, then it's going to be like a cherry on the top situation, because the core at the moment, from what I've seen throughout summer, is just different. It's just a different room. And yeah, I can notice that straight away. So
no, it's so exciting for everyone involved, both in, you know, you got to think for the long-term future of the club. A sponsor like Reckitt's is absolutely huge in securing that. But
yeah,
if we look to the nearer future, this season is going to be a fun one. You know, I'm not one to go out there and make, you know, league predictions, cup predictions, playoff predictions or anything like that at this stage. But all we know is we're in for a hell of a ride this year, and there's going to be some fantastic hockey, because this team's going to come to play this year. It's, you know, as you say, the confidence, you know, the energy, you know, in times of inside the room, but that I've got a pretty good feeling about the whole arena this year as well. I reckon that place is going to be absolutely rocking from week one.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I'd love a Coventry trip. I really would. I'd love everybody just to get a Coventry trip, whether it happens, whether it doesn't. But that'd be amazing for the fans, because they've stuck out like this season, you know. And the like in previous seasons, when I was a fan, I'd see what gets said on the fans forum and the pages, and you know they might get on a player's back or whatever. And it seems, I think the fans know that everybody did what they could do, like physically what they could do. So I think it's like it's going to be a time to repay the fans, and you know, a trip to Coventry would be absolutely, absolutely unreal. Yeah, be good. That's what I'm looking forward to, really.
No, it'd be a great sort of weekend out, and you know, I suppose it's a pretty good aim to have, isn't it? I think going forward for the season. Before we sort of wrap up here on Behind the Curtain, we're going to finish off with some excellent news for yourself, relating to your role as equipment manager, but it's not just going to be with the Hull Seahawks going forward. You had the go-ahead on Monday. You were going to be working with Team GB under-16s.
Yeah, that's correct. So a month ago, I got approached by Christian of the Jets. He mentioned that there's been some movement in the GB system, and the 16s coach moving to 18, the manager's moving up to 18. So he's done his research, he said, and spoke to a few people around the rink, told me to get in touch with a top guy at GB and put my CV in, and he wanted me there. And lo and behold, yeah, the top guy, Andy French, he said, yeah, you know, let's do it. Let's go from there. So Monday I've known a couple of weeks that it was unofficially mine. And then Monday I got a new email, confirmation email, you know, so it's real now. It's, yeah, a couple of days in Sheffield per month, and then hopefully a trip, well, will be a trip to Latvia after the season ends with the lads. See how that goes.
That's going to be absolutely fantastic, as you say. You know, these trips to Sheffield, that's enough for double training sessions, isn't it? And it all builds up to a tournament in Riga at the end of the year for the under-16s. And it's not just those, it's great for yourself, you know, obviously it's just even more, you know, ticks in the box, you know, for yourself, you know, as a fantastic equipment manager. But you're going to get a great chance to sort of get to know and to watch, you know, some of the future stars of British hockey as well. That's got to be quite exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I get to see the Sharks week in, week out training sessions. So I know what's going on in this junior setup, and the club's going places with a Div 1 and 2. And it's a good way to see what's going on around the country and who's going to be up and coming. So I look forward to it. And if anything comes of any of the players, give Matty the heads up. bit of a, you know, disguise. He's done well in training, and see what happens from there if they're local. And
he's got a full scouting system here now. We had Sylvan on a couple of weeks ago talking about how he's recruiting the young generation of Americans and Canadians. He's got yourself down with the under-16s in Sheffield. You know, you're gonna have our own network soon.
I've got the next 5 seasons of lads lined up. So just Matty needs to listen to me, and when I'll give him some names for next season, and we'll go from there, really. But yeah, there's some cracking lads in, like, young lads coming up, especially like in the under 12s. I know it sounds early, but some of these lads have been playing like 5 years already, and the skating is just phenomenal. So, like, throughout the junior system, there's a lot of good young talent that are up and coming. That, as long as Seahawks are going to be around, they're going to be tapping into that. And they need to be, like, quick, because they'll just get snapped up. Some of these young lads, just like Owen, I know he's gonna have a lot of attention on him again, and it's just good that we've got him for 2 years. So yeah, let's hope we can find another couple of Owens.
No, I think it's a great position to be in. Well, first of all, bringing the youth into the club, but you know yourself, it's absolutely, you know, phenomenal. You know, I say praise for yourself. Obviously, you've done such a good job with it here that the word's got around, and you know, obviously GB, I have paid notice of that. So obviously, big congratulations on a personal note to yourself. And I say, what a way to end this episode 14 of Hull Seahawks Behind the Curtain. It's been an absolutely fantastic chat. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Tommy, of course.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Tapping into sort of something that, you know, I think a lot of fans will absolutely love listening to be honest, because...
Yeah, to be fair, that's just scratching the surface. There's a lot more we can go into. Yeah, but you'll probably bore people. You know, it's just...
I think it's just...
This is just in a nutshell. Yeah, just in a nutshell, Liz.
I think it's just going to be a part two for later down the line, mid-season, yeah, hopefully. I think.
Yeah, mid-season, that'd be good, that.
Yeah. Of course, you know, if you know, as the listeners here on Behind the Curtain, if you haven't enjoyed today, you know, make sure you let us know, because this is what Behind the Curtain's all about. We absolutely love bringing Matty Davis and Joe Lamplew and all the players to you as well, but Behind the Curtain, it's not just about those, it's about the people who make the Hull Seahawks as we move behind that curtain into what is this fantastic ice hockey club. We've got to say thank you very much for listening. I've been your host, Connor Lynn. We've had our very special guest, Tommy Evans, on here for episode 14. Make sure you like, follow, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from, whether that be Apple, Spotify, or on YouTube. And stay tuned for next week for episode 15 of Behind the Curtain.